Hello again. This is the old Good Morning Man, Kermit Edney, with program number 134 in a series of 260 chapters dealing with the happenings and the people who made things happen over the past 50 years, the WHKP years since 1946. We follow the same format as the great Frank Fitzsimmons historical series, so we simply call it Where Fitz Left Off. And today, more on the most bizarre, grisly, gruesome, multiple murder case ever to have occurred in the state of North Carolina that happened here 30 years ago. We have the tremendous advantage today of retrospection into what took place 30 years ago that resulted in the deaths of Vernon Shipman, closer to 43 than 40 as first reported, Charles Glass closer to 37 than 40 reported, and Louise Davis Shoemate, who was 55 according to her driver's license, but was 62 according to a relative, but looked 45 to those who knew her. The following information that we're going to give you is all that was ever officially reported. On Sunday, July 17, 1966, at 2 in the afternoon, Charles Glass and Vernon Shipman, close friends and personal associates and owners of Tempo Music Shop, talked on the telephone. At 4:30, Louise Davis Shoemate got into her blue four-year-old Ford Fairlane and drove away from Ravencroft Apartments in Asheville. That was at 4:30. At 4:45, Vernon Shipman confirmed in a phone call to a friend he would meet him for dinner at 5:30. And Vernon was a very punctual individual and rarely missed an appointment. This one he did miss. Later on in August, no one knows of how Sheriff Paul Hill knew, but he then alleged that Shipman made still another call from his home at around 5:30. No information as to whom. At 6 p.m., the trio, along with another man, was spotted on Big Willow, headed toward Little River Road. The sightings were positive and made as both cars were moving slowly to pass on the narrow road. They were again spotted at 6:30 on Little River Road, and when their bodies were ultimately found, their clothing was as that described in these two sightings reported on Sunday, except that Shipman's coat was missing, and in fact has never turned up. Both sightings said that Shipman was driving. Glass was in the right front seat, the woman was in the rear seat on the left, and the other man was on the right in the back seat. He was wearing a shirt, a tie, a dark sport coat, and sunglasses. His identity has never been established, and of course he's never come forward. On Monday, friends and business associates were surprised when none of the three showed for work. Taylor Instrument, where the Shoemate woman worked, tried to contact their employee. The woman's phone didn't answer. On Monday morning, somebody called the sheriff's department at about 7 o'clock to report a Ford Fairlane with nobody in it abandoned on old 191 near the French Broad River. The sheriff's department got around to checking it out on Tuesday morning and found it to be registered to Mrs. Shoemate, who at that time nobody had ever heard of. Remember now, no one has even been reported missing at this point. Someone had also observed Monday morning Shipman's car was seen parked between the railroad tracks and Select Foods, but did not report it until later. Wednesday, friends of Shipman and Glass finally reported the two officially missing, and a search was begun. A description was released to the State Highway Patrol Network. Through Thursday, though police had now had reported to them and had confirmed that Shipman's car was indeed parked near Select Food, police now became much more apprehensive. Something very strange is going on here, and the search was intensified. Friday afternoon, Charles Hill of East Flat Rock and Larry Shipman drove upon the most gruesome sight they had ever seen and raced back to town to report to police. The two had been carrying a load of rubbish to be disposed of in an area about a half mile off North Lake Summit Road near the railroad and down toward the dam, and when their truck had eased out into a clearing beneath Duke Power Company's main transmission lines, they saw three bodies in a 10-foot semicircle. Their heads had been smashed and a part of a bumper jack, we'll say, just in their midst. From day one, police were hampered by the fact that it had rained several times between Sunday and that Friday afternoon. Police were convinced that the three had been killed there at the scene. Glass and Shipman were fully clothed. Shoemate's skirt was pulled below her knees and her blouse pulled from around her shoulders and placed under her back. All that was obvious that death had been caused from head injuries. An autopsy also revealed that there were dozens and dozens of wounds made around the woman's shoulder by an instrument the size of an ice pick, but all the wounds were of uniform depth. Glass and Shipman also had similar wounds around the neck. Glass's self-winding watch had stopped at 1:50, which could have been early Monday morning or that afternoon. This information was developed by police on the first day of the investigation, and in spite of intensive inquiry, that really is about all that was ever known. The local papers ran huge expose stories for the next 9 days, basically repeating the same information over and over. The SBI expanded their staff from 3 men to 5 men, and an off-location crime center for investigations for the triple murder was set up in a cottage on North Carolina 191. One of the SBI agents talked with me on several occasions and said he was so disgusted with the confusion prevailing, he was going to resign from the SBI. You see, it was an election year, and the local sheriff had on his own enlisted the aid of Buncombe County Sheriff Clay. Plus, the sheriff had said he had acquired the services of some character by the name of Ed Stanton, a private eye from Florida, and all these moves had not been made with any communication to the SBI or the local police department. According to my SBI informant, the SBI and police worked in one direction, the sheriff was moving in another direction, and there was no communication. Whether the triple murder had anything or not to do with it in the November election, all local Republican candidates won election except the sheriff, Paul Hill, who was defeated in a stunning upset by Democrat Jim Kilpatrick. And today we know only what we knew on the afternoon of July 22nd, 30 years ago. This memory of a seventh child of a seventh child, lucky enough to have been born here, the good sense never to leave him with the job he's loved all of his life. Sursum corda as we approach the next 50 years.